Welcome to Walden Behavioral Care's Eating Disorder Recovery Reflections podcast series. I'm Katie Fitzgerald, Walden's Director of Communications. Recovery Reflections is a podcast series where individual eating disorder survivors share their personal journey from struggle to recovery. On today's episode, we will hear Courtney's story. After nearly 10-year battle with an eating disorder, Courtney just celebrated her third ED-free year this past December. She loves sharing her story with others in hopes that it can help in some way. She's told her story in numerous treatment settings, as well as going back to her old high school to talk with students. She also enjoys writing eating disorder parody songs, and she's performed them at least 2 Boston Meta Walks. Her hope with the songs is to insert some much-needed laughter and humor into a subject that can often be emotionally draining and depressing. In addition to her recovery, Courtney is also a full-time nanny and does some pastry baking work on the side. Courtney, welcome to Recovery Reflections.
Yes, that. Those 2 words defined my entire childhood, adolescence, and a good chunk of my adulthood. A lot of times, the person who's saying those words was me. A lot of times, it wasn't. Don't you care that people think you're fat? You should, was the question my dad's then girlfriend asked me when I was 9 years old. Aren't you on a diet? Asked a fellow camper at age 8. You should be, was the response I heard from across the room from someone else. Nobody ever has to force you to eat anything, was my dad's response when I jokingly told him I was being forced to eat ice cream I didn't want. An animal lover from an early age, a musician, the wise guy, the quirky little kid who collected TV guides. No, seriously. Only a handful of the words that could be used to describe me, but none of them mattered. I was fat, which meant I was bad, not good enough. Any positive traits I may have had were completely null and void by that 3-letter word that ruled my life, fat. I spent a majority of my life believing that not only was I not good enough because I was fat, but that being fat was my destiny and there was nothing I could do to change it. Hell, I was born fat. At 9 pounds, 3 ounces, I was always ashamed of telling people how big I was when I was born. Right from the start, I wasn't good enough. Never mind that a fetus has no control over his or her weight, or the fact that I was 2 weeks late. I wasn't fat, I was overcooked. But no, from the very start, I had the wrong number, and the way I saw it, I always would. Now, I will say I wasn't tormented day and night about my fatness. There were times that I was able to sort of put it on the back burner and not so much forget that I was fat. After all, how could I forget that? But at least numb myself out to it a little. Just when I thought I was safe, though, and I had managed to put it aside, someone was nice enough to point it out to me, stripping me down again and exposing my dirty little secret that I so badly wanted to hide. By nature, I'm a soft-spoken person, but my insecurity about my weight made me painfully shy as I was growing up. Why try and put myself out there, trying to convince people that I was worth it, when they could clearly tell from the moment they saw me that I wasn't? I was fat. Like many children, I was a product of divorced parents. Having only been 2 when they split, it never occurred to me to see my situation as anything other than ordinary. It was ordinary for me that my mom remarried, which resulted in my younger brother, and it was ordinary for me that my dad introduced a new girlfriend to my life every couple of years or so. It also seemed ordinary that from the ages of 6 to 11, my mom, brother, and stepfather resided in Florida, while I still lived up in Massachusetts with my dad, and I would go to visit them during the summer and school vacations. As I later found out, though, it wasn't ordinary. It wasn't normal. Living in a constant revolving door of change isn't as conducive to a stable upbringing as you might think. And don't get me wrong, I don't blame my parents for my eating disorder. They did what they felt was best at the time. Unfortunately, though, a lot of the times my needs and best interests were unconsciously put on the back burner. Let me see if I can paint a little picture for you. Imagine you're at a big party. Everyone is dancing, eating, talking, generally just enjoying themselves in that moment. They all know what to do, what to say, and what move to make next. And then there's me, that one person who is completely and utterly clueless as to what to do next. We've all seen it. You're watching a group of people, and there's that one person who sticks out like a sore thumb, and all you can think to yourself is, man, that person has no idea what's going on. I was that person. I wander around the room in circles, aimlessly, trying to see if I can catch on somehow, but I can't. There's no routine or pattern I can follow, and the rest of the guests at the party are so caught up with what they're doing that no one notices how lost I am. So I just fake it. I don't have a thing and I don't know where my niche is. I just keep going along with things, hoping that someone notices the lost look on my face and comes to my aid. But that's not what happens. I never knew exactly what my role in my family was and where I fit in. The changes that were constantly taking place were never really explained to me, nor was I asked for my input. I always felt like a secondary character in my family. Important, but not always vital to the storyline. Finally, though, once the evening sort of came along, I no longer had to spend my time trying to figure out how to follow along with everyone else at the party. I didn't care what they were doing. I found my own thing. That feeling of being lost and out of place had disappeared. The eating disorder was mine. I controlled it, which in turn meant no one else could change it on me or tell me I was doing it wrong. I often refer to my eating disorder as the worst idea ever. Now, mind you, I probably had the makings of an eating disorder in me long before it actually appeared. I didn't choose to have an eating disorder. No one chooses that. But it was the summer before I began college, and naturally, I was nervous about the change that was about to happen. That if I lost some weight, then it would be easier to make friends and people would like me more. I'd be better. So I thought to myself, maybe I'll just eat once a day, and that'll probably help me lose weight. Enter the worst idea ever. I had no idea how that one little thought would eventually snowball my entire life. I did lose the weight, but I lost a lot of other things, too. Seems like my entire college experience, most of my 20s, and any happiness and joy I may have had before the eating disorder entered my life was most surely gone. I'd like to say that the eating disorder may be just a shell of my old self, and to some extent that was true. But I think what was so alluring about the eating disorder in the beginning and what kept me tied to it for so long was that it finally gave me a definition of who I was. The timing was perfect. I was about to go off to college. I was moving away from home for the first time and throwing myself into a situation where I pretty much had no idea what to expect. I've always been on the quiet side and shy and self-conscious, and I really didn't have a solid sense of who I was. It was hard enough dealing with that while I was still living at home. At least that was a safe and familiar place where I learned how to blend in and not make too much noise. But this was completely different. I had to start all over again, get to know people, let people get to know me, hope they'll like me, but yet I had no idea who me was, and quite honestly, I didn't really like myself all that much, so to say it was a little overwhelming would be an understatement. But then all of a sudden here comes this eating disorder, this thing for me to focus on, something I finally identify with. I controlled it. I made the rules. I changed the rules. After 18 years, I finally had something stable in my life, something I knew nobody could take away from me. No wonder it seemed like paradise in the beginning. The paradise didn't last very long, though. Before I knew it, I had left Hawaii and was permanently stationed in Antarctica. College was a blur. If I tried really hard, I could probably tell you some of the classes I took. I know I lived in a dorm on the Big Hill. I can't tell you where I'd go out because I never went out. But if you want to know about my eating disorder during that time, that I can easily break up for you in a semester-by-semester layout. Everything from behaviors to weights to rituals to clothes, you name it, I can tell you about it. As college progressed, so did my eating disorder. By my junior and senior years, it was all I could think about every second of every minute of every day. The chatter in my head was endless. What should I eat today? Wait, should I eat today? How can I avoid eating today? I do have to eat. That's the safest thing I could possibly have. I really messed up yesterday, so how am I going to compensate for that today? Do these clothes still fit the same way they did yesterday? Is my wrist the same size as yesterday? Smaller? Bigger? What about my legs? My face? I managed to make a few friends, mainly in part just due to proximity. Balancing an eating disorder in a normal life was pretty much impossible, and I always seemed to choose the eating disorder over the life part. When faced with the choice of hanging out with some friends or my eating disorder, who, let's face it, was my best friend, I almost always chose the eating disorder. You may be wondering where my family was at this time. Well, being as though I had went away to college and was on my own for the most part, I didn't really have anyone to answer to, and I was free to engage in the eating disorder as much as I wanted. Truth be told, though, when I did return home during breaks and holidays, the idea that I might have had an eating disorder never really crossed anyone's mind. Okay, well, I can't say that for sure, but it definitely wasn't ever mentioned to me. Perhaps you're thinking, why not? Didn't you look drastically different than you had before? I did. But let's not forget that before, I was fat. So weight loss was a good thing, a great thing even. I got so many positive compliments on how I looked. Never before in my life had people told me I looked good, and now it seems they were telling me that all the time. If anything, that just pushed me closer to the eating disorder. was finally starting to become okay. Health was completely irrelevant at that time. I was thinner, which meant I was better. It didn't matter how I got there. On the rare occasion that I did get brought up, say, with a close friend or family member, it was never talked about in depth, and my behaviors and appearance, while excruciatingly obvious at times, were never questioned. Early on in my eating disorder, both my parents, on separate occasions, made mention of it. My mom once discovered me using behaviors and confronted me about it, but I had no interest whatsoever in having that conversation with her or anyone else for that matter. She was living in Florida at the time, and I was living up here. I had just been up for a visit, so it was fairly easy once I returned home to shrug any mention of the eating disorder and pretend like everything was fine. My dad and I, while close in general, aren't so good with the communication. He's very observant and attuned to things, so I'm sure he knew something fishy was going on long before he actually said it. When he did, it came in the form of a casual comment slipped into a conversation we were having. He simply asked me if I used a particular behavior the night before. It caught me so off guard that I really wasn't sure what to say, not that I wanted to say much anyhow. So again, I just shrugged it off and pretended that nothing was wrong, and from there on out, it kind of just became the elephant in the room. The lack of attention and concern about my eating disorder among the people closest to me in my life led me to believe that it must not be that big of a deal. If there was actually a problem, people would say something, but they didn't. I knew that although I did my best to conceal it, I wasn't that good of an actress, and a lot of times my behaviors were pretty obvious. So if my behaviors are obvious to those around me, but nobody's saying anything, then I must be fine. I often wondered why I was making such a big deal about all of this, and I would chastise myself for over-exaggerating this almost non-existent problem. After college, I moved down to Florida to do, what else, go to culinary school, of course, because that made a lot of sense. Naturally, the eating sort of followed me, and although I was now in a warmer climate, I was still thinking nonstop about food, my body, and how I could change it. This was all starting to get a little old, though. At that point, I had spent about 5 years mercilessly beating up on my body and psyche, and I was getting pretty tired. Maybe this wasn't what I wanted to be doing after all. Being so far away from home had actually helped me open up a little and find some sort of genuine identity. I made some close friends, and when I finally decided I didn't want this to be my secret anymore, I was lucky enough to have people there to support me. So I was ready to get better. Great. But what exactly did that mean? I mean, it couldn't be all that hard, I thought. I heard stories of other people who had recovered, and I'd read about it and seen on TV and in the movies. It didn't seem like there was that much to be done. I admit that I have a problem and I want to change. First step, done. So now what? I find a therapist, talk it out for a few weeks, fix everything that needs fixing, and bada bing, bada boom, I'm a expert. Well, apparently, unless you're a character in Full House, it doesn't quite work that way. My first dabble in treatment was just that, a dabble. I knew I had to change the way I was living, and I was pretty sure I wanted to, but I was neither prepared for nor aware of the amount of work that would entail. I saw a therapist and a nutritionist while I was living in Florida, and I attended a few support groups. It wasn't the fix-all I had originally thought, but I did start moving in a healthier direction. I had a really crappy job at the time, though, which really wasn't helping me move any closer to recovery. The job was so bad that when my friend from culinary school asked me if I wanted to move to Alabama and do a house with her and her parents to help her run the bakery she had recently opened, it seemed like a great idea. I should add that I wasn't getting paid for my work. They couldn't afford that. So instead, I'd work for them in exchange for room and board. Indentured servitude is essentially, that's how bad my job at the time was. At first, I was a little nervous about what this move might do to my blossoming recovery, but before long, I convinced myself that it was a great idea, helpful even. I never thought of residential or inpatient treatment as much of an option, which is why I'd never done it. But moving in with Judy, my friend, I made it mean that maybe I could create my own treatment center. Judy knew more than anyone else about my eating disorder, and she was very attuned to the use of my behaviors and very clear that it would not be tolerated in her house. Maybe that'll work then, I thought. I mean, Judy's not exactly therapeutic, but being in a place where I can't use behaviors, that's a pretty surefire way to help me keep the habit, right? No, actually. It was the exact opposite. Living in Alabama was nothing like I thought it would be. Rather than having people around me who were supportive of my exploration and discovery into who I really was, I had people trying to mold me into what they believed I should be and chastising me for everything I did that was not in exact accordance with that. Honestly, it was almost as if the eating disorder voice had taken human form and that's who it had turned into. Living with her and her family and experiencing that whole situation was so stressful that it did nothing but push me closer to my behaviors. I did manage to stay behavior-free for the most part for the 2 months or so that I lived with her, but by the time I made my great escape, I was so stressed out and so confused as to what to do next with my life that the first thing I did was jump right back into the eating disorder, a big, giant, high-dive, cannonball-style jump. After my not-so-sweet home Alabama debacle, I decided to move back up to Massachusetts. After a few months of being home, I decided that I was ready to take a real stab at treatment. I decided to do the day program at a treatment center a couple blocks away from where I was working at the time. It seemed like the perfect setup. I'd finish treatment at 3:30 and then head off to work for 4. Since most of my time would be taken up by treatment and work, I figured that was a surefire way to get rid of the eating disorder. Side note, FYI, there are no surefire ways to get rid of an eating disorder. And even if I did have some spare time here and there, I figured since I was putting so much effort into treatment, I wouldn't want to waste that by using behaviors in my off time. Makes a little bit of sense, right? That's not exactly how it worked out, though. When I walked in for my intake that day, I figured I'd be in and out of there within 6 weeks or so. I thought the way it works is that I enter the program, learn what I need to learn, they'd fix me, so to speak, and when I left, I'd be recovered. Whatever that means. I viewed it very much like school, like the treatment program I was entering was comparable to that of an EMT program or an accounting program. The way I saw it was all I had to do was go there, complete the program, and then I'd leave with my certificate of recovery. I'd always done well in school, so I had no reason to think this would be any different. But to paraphrase Chandler Bing, could I have been any more wrong? The way I was looking at it was from a purely cerebral and logical stance. But what I failed to take into account were the emotions, the feelings, all the things that actually contributed to the development of my eating disorder in the first place. That first round of treatment was a complete and utter shock to my system. Because I had no idea what I was actually up against, I went in not only completely unarmed, but also completely oblivious and ignorant as to what lay ahead. It was like entering a war where the only thing you have written on your battle plan is win. I went in there seeking recovery. Great. Except I had no idea what that meant. I had no definition of what recovery was in my head, and I had no idea how I wanted to get there, how I was supposed to get there, or even why I wanted to get there in the first place. I'd heard that this recovery thing was better, and I was under the impression that I should want it. Up until that point, I had been pretty much fighting this demon on my own, and I was becoming more and more depleted by the day. I just couldn't do it anymore. I was sick, and I was tired, and I needed a way out. Treatment was my way out. At least that's how I saw it. The problem, though, lied in the huge discrepancy between how I viewed the process of treatment and recovery in my mind and how it actually was in reality. It was as if I was Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, and I believed all I had to do in order to get home, or in my case, to recover, was follow the yellow brick road. Simple as that. I was completely unprepared, though, for all the evil witches and flying monkeys and lions and tigers and bears, oh my, that came along with the yellow brick road. I didn't think it was going to be as hard as it was, and so a lot of times when I encountered an obstacle, I would take that to mean that I failed, and it'd just be impossible for me to reach my destination. It was the summer of 2011, and by that time I had been struggling with an eating disorder for the better part of 9 years. I spent the last 2 years in and out of treatment searching for this thing they call recovery. I was about to enter my third treatment program, and that ideological belief that I once held was all but gone. I honestly started to wonder if maybe I'd never rid myself of this demon. Maybe for the rest of my life, I would just have some degree of an eating disorder. There might be times where things were really rough and times where they weren't so rough, but I'd never actually be recovered. Despite my less than optimistic outlook, I decided to enter treatment anyways because, one, I felt like crap, and two, even though I had tried to convince myself otherwise, I knew the fact of the matter was that eating disorders don't work. Not a sustainable lifestyle, and whether I wanted it to or not, something had to change. Although my expectations for treatment were fairly low, I still knew I had to go in there with a different mindset. First thing that needed to change, I had to stop trying to prove that I deserved to be in treatment by continually engaging in the eating disorder while I was there. From the moment that my eating disorder began, I never felt like I deserved to get help for it. I always felt like a fraud, and I was convinced that everyone else around me, treatment providers included, felt the same way. I don't know if it was consciously or unconsciously, probably a little of both, but I thought that in order to prove that I deserved to be in treatment, I had to keep engaging in the eating disorder so they knew I really had one. I didn't realize until much later how flawed my thinking really was. The reason I was in treatment to begin with was to get rid of the eating disorder. But how could I get rid of it if I was continually engaging in it? I was stuck in a no-win situation. I had to face reality. Any way I sliced it, treatment was going to be uncomfortable. Now, I could stick with the uncomfortable that I knew, which is continuing to engage in the eating disorder, slightly quelling that loud voice in my head that kept telling me I didn't deserve to be there. Or I could take the road less traveled and test out life without the eating disorder. Just the thought of that was enough to terrify me, but something had to give. I just couldn't live like this anymore. Along the same lines, I had to start getting through my head that I did not have to have an eating disorder or be sick in some way in order to want or deserve to be loved and cared for. The simple fact that I exist on this earth is more than enough to warrant wanting and receiving love and care. That was a tough one. It's still something I struggle with from time to time. Something else was different about this time, too. In addition to feeling like I had to prove my eating disorder to those around me, being in the treatment setting used to make me yearn more for the eating disorder. I wanted to feel like I belonged there, like I deserved to be there, so I'd throw myself even further into the disorder so everyone knew I was one of them. There's a lot of great things about group treatment, but one of the big downfalls is that sometimes all it does is teach you how to be even better at your eating disorder. It's hard enough just pushing through recovery with your own eating disorder attached to you, never mind the company of the eating disorders of 6, 7, 8 other people. You're just drowning in negative and distorted thoughts. That was a huge issue for me throughout treatment. Something had shifted, though. Don't ask me what, because I'm honestly not really sure. I'm not really sure how. I just know that this time I had lost my desire to fit in with the eating disorder crowd. I still had my ambivalence about getting rid of my own eating disorder, but the desire that I once had for the identity of a person with an eating disorder had really started to diminish. The anxiety and the drama and all that stuff that comes along with being in treatment, all the stuff I used to crave for, now I wanted no part of it whatsoever. These were not my people. I did not belong here. Despite my anxious tendencies, deep down, I really am a laid-back, go-with-the-flow kind of person. And for the first time in a while, I was really trying to tap back into that. I couldn't stand being around all that unnecessary anxiety. It was at this point in my treatment when I think Courtney actually started to come out and Ed moved a little further back. I, Courtney, was tired of all of this. I was tired of getting all up in arms over the possibility of having to consume an extra exchange. I didn't want someone standing over me, making sure I had the right number of carrots on my plate. And for the love of God, I just wanted to pee without having to count or sing to someone listening outside. I spent about 10 weeks in treatment that last go around. I don't think I had a plan this time about what was supposed to happen now that I discharged. I was basically just trying to make it through each day. It's the holiday season, which is hard enough for someone without an eating disorder, so that added quite a bit of stress. I wasn't using behaviors as often as I had pre-treatment, but I had my fair share of slip-ups. Then something really odd happened, something to this day that I consider to be my catapult into the recovery I'm in now. It was Christmas Eve. I hadn't used behaviors in a few weeks, which was actually a really long time for me. It wasn't something I put a lot of effort into. It just sort of happened. At that point, I wasn't feeling the need to use behaviors every minute of every day. But if an opportunity arose, it was hard to pass up, and I usually ended up giving in. For some reason or another, the opportunity hadn't presented itself during those 3 weeks, so I just hadn't engaged in anything. Christmas Eve was finally my time, though. I had some family stuff to do during the early part of the night, and then everyone was going off in their own direction, leaving me in the house alone. I guess I was spending my night with Ed. Initially, I thought that's what I wanted, and I was kind of looking forward to it. But as the day wore on, I actually started second-guessing that feeling. The eating disorder would lead me to believe that using behaviors was going to make me happy. But in reality, I knew what would happen was I'd probably get about 15 seconds of joy out of it, and then I'd spend the rest of the night completely miserable. What if I decided to do something else instead? I mean, was that even an option? I had the perfect opportunity to use behaviors. How was I supposed to pass that up? But wait, didn't I just spend the last couple of months in treatment with the goal of doing this, just that, passing up behaviors even when the opportunity presented itself? I didn't know what to do. All night I kept going back and forth in my head. Do I? Don't I? Finally, it was the moment of truth. My dad was getting ready to head off for work, and his girlfriend was heading over to her family's house for a get-together. In a moment of strength, I blurted out to my dad's girlfriend, "Hey, can I go with you tonight?" "Of course," was the answer I received. Instead of feeling guilty for giving up on any behaviors, I had this overwhelming sense of relief. That was new. Still, despite the promising shift in my feelings towards not engaging in the eating disorder, the idea of actual recovery wasn't at the forefront of my mind. The days started to go by, and before I knew it, it had been 2 weeks since Christmas Eve, and I still hadn't engaged in any behaviors. That's like 5 weeks no behaviors. First thought that went through my mind, how the hell have I managed to do that? Second thought, well, this isn't going to last. But somehow it did. I went from 5 weeks behavior-free to 8 weeks, and before I knew it, it had been 12 weeks since I'd used behaviors. For the first time, recovery was starting to feel good, really good. I was happy I wasn't engaging in the eating disorder. Life seemed to open up again. It felt like I was looking at the world through these rose-colored glasses. It's what I like to refer to as the recovery honeymoon. Like most honeymoons, this one didn't last forever, and eventually stuff started to get real. I didn't have the dark cloud of the eating disorder hanging over my head anymore, but life was still life, and sometimes it was hard. I guess I had forgotten to factor that in when I formed that vision of recovery in my head all that time ago. Unlike the times before, though, the toughness of life didn't send me running right back to the eating disorder. In part, some of that had to do with the fact that I had already acquired such a good chunk of time away from the eating disorder. I knew all the work that had got into it, and I knew if I used behaviors, it would eventually lead me right back to the beginning, then have to do it all over again. To be honest, I think I just became too lazy to have an eating disorder. It's a lot of work to put into something that made me feel so bad. I also came to the realization that it was okay I didn't feel great all the time, because eating disorder or not, nobody feels great all the time. That's how life is. And sometimes it's going to be hard, and sometimes I'm going to want to give in, but if I hold out, if I don't go running straight back to the eating disorder every time, the good things that life has to offer are just going to be that much better. It's been a little over 3 years since I last used any eating disorder behaviors. Recently, I watched a TED Talk by a woman by the name of Glennon Doyle Melton. She describes life as being simultaneously beautiful and brutal, or as she puts it, brutiful. These last 3 years have been the most brutal years of my life. I've finally been able to get my life back. I'm spending time with friends, I'm enjoying good food, I'm dating again, work is going well, I'm actually a participant in the world around me. My life is moving, albeit slowly, in the direction I want it to. But holy crap, is this recovery thing hard. Everyone's always saying recovery isn't easy. Well, there's an understatement. By not easy, they mean it's the hardest thing you're ever going to have to do, and you feel like crap 80% of the time, depending on the day, and you just want to throw the towel in, then yes. Not easy would be a correct statement. Look, I know I'm making it sound terrible, and I'm not going to lie. Some parts of it are. But there are also some parts that are really, really awesome. They're just kind of jumbled up together, and when you get to experience one of those really awesome times, you remember why you continue to put up with the not-so-awesome times. It's been said before, but I'll say it again. Your worst days in recovery are better than your best days in your eating disorder. Another important thing to remember is that it doesn't stay this hard forever. The beginning is rough, but the further you move into recovery, the easier things get. Life is still hard, but you realize it's worth it. And the eating disorder? Well, it just isn't. I'm not going to pretend I have this whole recovery thing figured out, because I don't, not by a long shot. But I have learned a few things along the way, and if I may, I'd like to share with you what I call my top 5 secrets to succeeding in recovery. Number 1. Don't waste your time striving for perfection. There's no such thing, and any futile attempt to find it will only lead to frustration and disappointment. Recovery, like life, isn't even close to perfect. As scary as that is, it's also kind of liberating, I think. You don't have to worry about making your recovery just right, because there is no just right. No one thing, no wrong move can determine whether or not you'll achieve full recovery. It is always an option. To quote the oh-so-amazing book, Oh, the Places You'll Go, by the incomparable Dr. Seuss, and will you succeed? Yes, you will indeed. 98.75% guaranteed. Except when you don't, because sometimes you won't. Number 2, learning to tolerate being uncomfortable is key. You can't wait till you feel like doing it. That day's probably never going to come. Actions first, feelings later. If you feel like crap, keep going. You're probably on the right track. You're not going to feel like that forever. Eventually, you'll learn to become more comfortable, but in the beginning is long. It sucks. There's just no two ways about it. My therapist, who is absolutely amazing, always tells me short-term discomfort for long-term gain, which I think is such a key thing to keep in mind. Number three, you know how our treatment providers are always cautioning us against hanging out with people who need treatment? Well, it turns out they might actually have a point. Learning this one is huge for me. It's great to have someone who knows what you're going through, who can relate to. You spend so much time with the people you need treatment, and you're literally telling them your deepest and darkest secrets, so how could you not expect to want to be friends with them outside of treatment? But you have to be really mindful about who you choose to surround yourself with. And like everything else in the recovery process, you have to be really honest with yourself about why you're hanging out with them in the first place. Is it because you like being around them? Or is it because your eating disorder likes being around them? Chances are it's probably both. And while it's possible to have a healthy relationship with someone you met in treatment, you have to get healthy first. I spent a long time willingly putting myself into triggering situations, and it held me back in my recovery. Trust me, put your recovery first, and everything else will fall into place. Number four, full recovery or even just recovery in general doesn't mean that all of a sudden you always feel good about yourself and you never have any negative thoughts about food or your body. It just means that you finally found other things that are more important than that. I still have moments where I freak out. I get self-conscious. I worry about my weight. I worry that any moment this normalcy thing that I've been trying out over the last few years is going to implode on me and everything will go down the drain. The difference now, though, is that I'm forcing myself to tolerate these freakouts. The only way I'm ever going to know if my body can handle eating a certain food or eating so many times a day or whatever it is to just do it. I have to be my own guinea pig in this experiment, which sucks. But somewhere along the way, I just decided that the eating disorder wasn't worth putting my life on hold for anymore. And then number five, secrets to succeeding in recovery. There are no secrets to succeeding in recovery. All of that other stuff, you can only figure it out on your own time when you're ready. To quote another fine masterpiece, Kung Fu Panda, there is no secret ingredient. To make something special, you just have to believe it's special. In other words, in order to recover, you just have to believe that you can recover. That's it. Nobody can do it for you, and it's not something you can force. Later on, you might think back and remember, I feel like I've heard that before. Or, oh, so that's what that person is talking about. But until you decide you're ready to commit, to really commit to recovery, that's when you learn the most. Writing my recovery story was hard. Not so much because it brought back all those painful memories, but because I found it incredibly difficult to take 10 years of eating disorder hell and 3 years of blood, sweat, and tears of recovery and package it all up into a nice 30 to 40 minute talk. I was so afraid of accidentally making it sound like it was easy. It was not easy. Not one second of it. I just want to make that very clear. But it was 100% guaranteed, totally and completely worth it. This is just my story. Chances are your story is a little different. Maybe it's a lot different than mine. But no matter the differences in our journeys, we're all capable of reaching the same destination. No matter how far you've fallen, recovery is always an option. Recovery is always a possibility.
Thank you, Courtney, for sharing your recovery story with us. Listeners, Thanks. We encourage you to share this Recovery Reflection podcast with those you feel could use a boost of inspiration as they travel their own road to eating disorder recovery. Thank you for listening.